Welcome to Paint Ed. Hey, I'm Chris Shank, the education guy at the Painting Contractors Association. PCA provides painting contractors with the training and connections they need to grow their business. To find out more, visit pcapainted.org. Welcome to the Road Ready series of podcasts brought to you by the Painting Contractors Association and our good friends at BF Goodrich, along with their Tradesman Support Program. On this third and final episode of our Road Ready series, Brandon Sturgis from BF Goodrich returns to talk about driving safety and courtesy that impacts your entire team. A lot of companies put employees in the driver's seat without any form of assessment or training whatsoever, and this can be detrimental to your company's reputation, overall safety, fleet upkeep, and can drastically reduce your profits. Brandon and I discuss ways you can start assessing, training, and keeping your team up to speed on the road and in your work vehicles. Learn more at bfgoodrichtires.com and find the Tradesman Support Program at bfgoodrichtires.com/tradesman. Hey, Brandon, welcome to Paint Ed.
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So this is our third episode in the Road Ready series with BF Goodrich. We're talking about basically what employers can do to make sure their vehicles and their tires are safe and everything's efficient and as durable for as long as it possibly can be, which affects your profits as a company. And today we're going to talk about driving. But before we do that, we know that this is part of the Tradesman Support Program at BF Goodrich. Could you explain again what that is for people?
Yeah, sure thing. This Tradesman Support Program that we came up with is really the first of its kind in the industry. And we wanted to create this program to support the people who work on tough job sites and require tough tools to get the job done. So if you're a member of an approved association, you can get a $100 rebate when you purchase a set of 4 BF Goodrich All-Terrain TA KO2s. And if you're not a member of an approved association, you can still get a $70 rebate. So along with the rebate, we're also giving folks a 30-day satisfaction guarantee, 24-hour work site and roadside assistance, and you get a chance to win a trip to the Baja 1000 or the Mint 400.
Okay, and how long is that going, by the way?
So we actually, we don't have a stop point for this program. We plan on continuing it.
Fantastic. Well, it sounds awesome. We have talked about, as I mentioned, vehicle and tire safety and durability. Let's talk about driving now. So does BF Goodrich have good drivers testing their tires? I know we've talked a little bit about that. So I want you just to tell me about how you guys know about good driving.
Yeah. So, we have a good group of folks that work at our test track. That's about 45 minutes outside of our headquarters here in Greenville, South Carolina. And to become one of the test drivers that works for BF Goodrich, it's actually a pretty cool process. Well, first you have to go through an interview process. And if you've ever been on a job interview, you can know how those can be a little bit stressful. Mm-hmm. But add on top of that, you have to do a talking part of the interview, and then you have to do a driving part of the interview. And I remember going through that when I became a test driver, and it was the most challenging and exciting and nerve-wracking day of my life, but ended up turning out to be pretty good, and I got to be one of the test drivers for BFG.
Now, were you already an extraordinarily good driver, or how did you?
I was okay enough to pass the test. I'll put it like that.
Gotcha.
So my uncle and grandfather used to race go-karts and back in the day, and I kind of got into that with them for a little bit, and then got into some autocrossing and in college, and did a little bit of motorcycle racing, which my mom wasn't super happy with, but so I had a little bit of background, but actually learned quite a bit during the driver development program here at BF Goodrich. So after that interview process, you really spend a full year training. So you're doing some work, but you're spending a lot of your time learning how to drive, learning how to control the car. So we spend a lot of time with our drivers up front with what we call car control. So we spend about 6 months doing car control training.
Wow.
And so that 6 months is really there to make sure you can control a car in really any sort of situation. So we spent a lot of time in the wet and sliding the cars and trucks and all sorts of vehicles around, all sorts of tire combinations, all sorts of vehicles, so that no matter what you're driving, if you start to lose control, because you're wanting to test tires kind of on the edge, and if you go over that edge a little bit, you want to make sure that you can keep the car under control. And so we're testing in the wet. We do training in the wet. We do training in the snow. We do training in the dry. And really, we found that to be the best way to start training a new driver, because it's really getting the fundamentals of car control and safety under your belt first.
Wow.
And then you can start learning the testing, what you have to do for testing after that. So we found that to work well for us. It keeps we've had a very good track record in terms of safety on site and even off site when we go do our winter testing off site. So it's worked really, really well for us to do it that way.
Hmm. Okay. So if there were a few things that business owners expected from their employees regarding driving, what would those things be? I'm guessing you guys have learned a lot in the training that you've gone through and the testing you do. What are some crossover lessons that owners could use on their crew?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Hopefully their crew doesn't have to drive or isn't driving the way we would drive on the test track.
Good point.
so hopefully there's not that sort of crossover. But really, I mean, if there's anything I could say, it would just be if there's any sort of driver training programs that are available to really help with driver safety, that would be a good place to start. One thing that I know that has worked well, I know that we've done it here at PF Goodrich with our sales team, and actually I know that my mom and my uncle own a small trucking company, and so they've implemented this with their drivers, and that's just having the vehicle monitoring. The way to monitor to vehicles while the crew is driving the fleet. Yeah. And to me, I think that has been a really good thing, at least from what I've seen on my family small business and here at BF Goodrich. It really helps people understand how the way they drive can keep them safe. And a very good example of that is seeing what insurance companies are doing today with the discounts that they're offering. If your vehicle is monitored and you can see how safe you're driving on a day-to-day basis.
Hmm. Yeah, that's true. They have those monitors. I've used those before, and you know, it's recording things like how fast you start up or slow down and come to a stop and turns, and it wants to see intentionality, that you're premeditating what you want to do in driving and not just
right.
reactive merely, but you're kind of taking the proactive steps to slow down, to think a little bit more, which we all need to do in life in general, but especially while driving. So, you know, I was actually thinking through what you were talking about, the training that you have to go through for those test tracks. And I wonder if, you know, employers hiring or even just putting somebody in the driver's seat, if they are thinking about what kind of a driver this person is, I wonder what kind of preparations are made, if any. Sometimes that's reactive too, not just the way you drive, but who you put in the driver's seat. I wonder what kind of assumptions are being made about the quality of driving that this person is capable of. And I wonder what we could do to kind of help employers understand how to prepare somebody for being in that new role of driving for a company. Because it's not like driving your vehicle, not just in courtesy, but in terms of safety and efficiency and things like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it just got me thinking a little bit more about maybe part of the job interview process is either during the job interview process or after the person is hired, maybe there needs to be some sort of a driving interview, right? If you're going to be spending, if your employee is going to be spending a lot of time behind a company-owned vehicle, behind the wheel of a company-owned vehicle, maybe it's a good practice to do a little driving interview or or a driving assessment once the employee is hired.
Right. And why wouldn't you do that? But
Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, it's not really a bad idea.
yeah. And so I do wonder, I would love to hear comments from contractors to hear who does that kind of a thing and what are some, do you have like a checklist that you go over? Because there, again, so much profit and the safety of your crew is dependent upon how these people drive, and your reputation is on the line. I mean, again, you could learn a lot about how a person drives, not just what they do on the road, but what their general work ethic is. How trustworthy are they? And I'm not saying everybody's the same level of driving competency, but there's something that there that you don't want to miss and you want to pay attention to if you're putting somebody there. That's just so much more responsibility. And I don't want to overplay that. I mean, I think sometimes you just need somebody to drive from one place to the other, but I don't want to underplay it either and act like it's no big deal. It is a really big deal if you stop and think about it. So, okay, let me ask you specifically about some things like driving in the rain. What kind of things have you learned about driving in wet conditions that might help some employees and business owners know how to be more safe and take care of their vehicle?
Yeah, so driving in the wet is it's probably, if I would venture to say, it's probably the second most second scariest condition to drive in, just behind snow. I think people are a bit more cautious and a bit more nervous when they're driving on snow. And so, driving in, I'll start with driving in the dry. That's one of the easiest conditions to drive in. Typically, it's sunny, at least there's good visibility. You have the most traction on the road when the road's dry and it's not raining. But as soon as it starts raining, even just a light rain, the conditions change quite drastically, and so you lose a lot of traction. More accidents happen in the wet by percentage of time. More accidents happen in the wet versus in the dry. And so the best thing to do is to be a bit more cautious, to slow down a little bit, to anticipate what you want to do, if you need to slow down, accelerate, and turn. It's just being more cautious. And I know we've talked before about, the maintenance part of your vehicle, checking your tread depth. Tread depth helps with evacuation of water. And when it starts raining really, really hard, that's when hydroplaning can happen, especially in certain sections of the interstate when you're going at interstate speeds.
I want to slow down right there because I think people think that tread is most about, traction in dry conditions or when it's gravelly or whatever it is. But right there, during wet conditions, you said that the tread depth does impact water evacuation and helps you avoid hydroplaning, right?
That's correct. Yep. Tread depth helps with water evacuation and prevents hydroplaning.
Right. I just want people to just hear that because we skip over that part sometimes when you're not taking care of your tires and it's rainy, not just snowing, not just gravelly, but wet. Having the right tires on and having them updated is going to be a huge help. So, okay, so there's rain. What about snow?
Yeah, snow is, I'd say snow is the most difficult situation for people to drive in, and probably is makes people the most nervous. It's definitely the most unpredictable type of surface to drive on. I forget how many different types of snow Alaskans say exist. I forget that number, but it's really amazing how the conditions, snow conditions, and the traction can change just in a split second. I mean, snow is very, very sensitive to the temperature changes. And actually, the colder snow is, the more traction you get to a certain point. If you get too cold, like minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit and below, then the properties of tires start really changing. But that's really super cold. But if you're colder than freezing, you actually get more traction. The closer you get to freezing, the tires in the snow has less traction. I just wanted to add that a lot of people that live up north, they talk about us southerners and how we can't drive. And I always tell people it's always because we drive in the snow that doesn't have as much traction as you.
Right, exactly. That's funny. No, that is interesting, though. That's a really good point. Okay. So rain, snow, anything else about snow, by the way?
Yeah, the big thing for snow is just the changing conditions. I mean, it can change in 15 or 20 minutes, just depending on if how the snow falling is. Are you getting more snow? Is the temperature rising? Is the temperature falling? It's really crazy how the conditions can change very quickly, and depending on section of road that you're driving on. Like for example, if you're driving on a snowy road or a road that had been snowed on, and let's say maybe part of the road is now in the sun, and that road is now doesn't have any snow on it because the sun has warmed up the road and the snow has melted. Well, you could crest a hill or go around a corner that's now in the shade, and now that section is snowy and icy. And so the conditions, like I said, can just change just like that.
Another reason to be thoughtful and careful. Okay. So let me ask you about things like defensive driving. You have any thoughts there?
I don't know if I really like that term, defensive driving, so much. I usually like to call it courteous driving. And really, it's, when I think about it, when I have time to myself and really kind of reflect on some of the things that I see, what's really interesting is, as a person, if you're walking down a sidewalk and you accidentally bump into someone, typically you say, "Oh, excuse me," and there's just nice little exchange of apologies, and people go on about their day, and maybe you open the door for someone to let them in or to let them out. So when you're walking around, normally everyone is typically quite courteous from my experience. But it's amazing what happens when people get into this cage, into this vehicle, and how that mindset kind of changed. So if everyone drove the way they walk down the sidewalk, I would think that we would be in a better, much better situation.
It's interesting. There's this illusion of anonymity when we get behind the wheel. People can't, we think we become that car. We lose kind of that individual identity. We're just like any other car on the road. I think it feels like we don't have as direct of a connection with people. And it's like moving machines that are interacting with each other. We tend to be a little bit more bold and a little bit more careless, a little bit more less empathetic, because we treat somebody like their vehicle, and vehicles in our vehicle doesn't have feelings. And so I think it's got to be the two removes away. I'm removed from my vehicle. My vehicle is removed from their vehicle. Their vehicle is removed from them. Actually, that'd be like three removes or four. But I think that has to do. That impacts the lack of empathy, I think, that we see sometimes. It's just the illusion of anonymity. I think you're right about the courteous part. I think your reputation is online. I mean, people could get online and review your company based upon driving behaviors. Also, driving behavior doesn't stop until you're out of the vehicle. So that includes, if you have somebody that's a discourteous driver, they're going to be discourteous from the moment they get in their vehicle to the moment they get out, which you have employees in vehicles, in work vehicles, and in their own vehicles on work sites all the time. And so people are going to see how they arrive. People are going to see how they behave in their car, even when they're sitting there taking a smoke break or whatever it is. It could be just anything, and your reputation is on the line. So you really want to watch, how do people behave? Are they courteous in their vehicles?
Exactly. Anytime I would drive a BF Goodrich company vehicle, and it had BF Goodrich on the side of the vehicle, I treated that as an extension of the company. And when I'm driving it down the road, I want people to see that vehicle and to know that they're going to be respected. And that same respect, that same respect would come from me in my own personal vehicle, the way I normally drive. But yes, that vehicle is an extension of our company, and we want to make sure that it's shown in the best light possible.
Okay. I want to get to texting in just a second, but fuel efficiency, do you have any comments about that?
Yeah, fuel efficiency. It kind of gets back to some of the same discussions that we talked about earlier on one of the previous podcasts on durability, vehicle durability. The easier you accelerate, the more reasonable speed that you drive, the better that you are in anticipating braking, approaching a stoplight, not going, not accelerating hard all the way to the stoplight and then coming on the brakes. All of those things really, really help with fuel efficiency. We've also talked before about maintaining your tire pressure. If you maintain your tire is going to be more efficient, and therefore your vehicles are going to be more fuel efficient.
What about there is the economy button? I think it's fuel economy, and you'll see that in some vehicles, a lot of the newer ones. What does that actually do?
I know it's different for different manufacturers, but what I've experienced is it really changes the what I refer to as the throttle gain. So you really have to press the gas pedal a lot more to get the same acceleration if you are not in economy mode. Okay. And so what it does, it really kind of helps you not accelerate as quickly as you would in the normal mode, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure does. Sure does. Okay, let's take a moment to talk about texting while driving. It's getting pretty bad. I mean, I read about this all the time. And you know, I think everybody does it to some degree. And I'm looking at as my daughter gets older and she's going to be driving really soon, and then my son, I'm going to have zero tolerance for it. But, you know, everybody's there at the stoplight and they, okay, this is a good time to text, or you're on the side of the road and you're thinking, okay, this, and then you start going and then you're like finishing off what you're doing. And you're thinking, well, I'm a good driver. Well, I'm safer than everybody else. Well, you always have these well, right? To justify what you're doing. And then we read about it all the time. And I hate those commercials with the last texts that people have sent and how banal and mundane those texts are. You realize that we like to think that somebody's doing something extraordinarily, flagrantly bad and they knew better or whatever, but sometimes it really was just, well, somebody sent me a text and said, are you going to be here in 5 minutes? And I had to text back and yeah, I'll be there, or yeah, that's right, or whatever it is, no matter how short. And a lot of those last texts that you read are really short. So do you have any comments about the imperative to be telling your crews that they cannot be texting while driving?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. It really has to be zero tolerance for texting while driving. That's our company policy and our company vehicles. We're not allowed or supposed to be texting while driving. And I mean, I consider myself a fairly good driver. I think that I'm quite good behind the wheel. But one thing that I can admit that I'm not good at is multitasking, which would be driving and texting at the same time.
Right.
I know that I can't do it, and I just don't do it.
Yeah.
Gosh, and my wife even tells me I can't text and have a conversation with her at the same time,
right.
So let alone text and drive a car at the same time. So,
yeah, that's a good point. And I'm the same way. I am not good at doing two things at once. It's kind of interesting, though, how that slips underneath the radar. And I'm glad to hear that you never, ever, ever do it. Do you think that employers ought to make some kind of a policy where there's the not texting while driving sort of notification that is sent to people who text you while you're driving? That might be one way to curb that. Any other ways that you think that employers can curb that texting behavior?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. It's a difficult one. I mean, we just have a policy on it, and you know, like it's just our company policy. And of course, you know, you're not breaking the policy unless you get caught, right?
Right.
And so the only way to get caught is, you know, either you were in an accident and you were found at fault for the accident, and you were texting while you were driving, and that was. You know, that's just one way of getting caught. But yeah, it's a really good question. I don't know if there's a great way of enforcing that. I'm not a tech savvy kind of guy, so I don't know if there's a way to install something in a vehicle that kind of removes all cell communication, which is one way of possibly doing it. But I mean, I know that my phone right now has a setting that it knows when I'm driving a car and sends automated messages to people who text me that saying, you know, saying that I'm unavailable and I can't text right now because I'm driving a car.
Yeah.
And I have that feature turned on because, I mean, f- my opinion, any techs can wait until I get to a point where I can safely get back on the phone and send a text.
Well, I love the idea of the driving interview. You mentioned that it might be also nice if you had some kind of a policy in your company, especially for people who are driving for you. I think it'd be best if you're expecting workers to show up on work sites and they're driving. I think it'd be great for you to write in a policy that when they're driving on work time, that they are not texting, that they're either setting their phones to silent or airplane mode or whatever it is, that they use that responder that automates those texts while you're driving. I think it would be nice to at least have it in policy to tell people how serious you are about it. Because if you're just kind of taking the passive attitude of, well, they're going to do it anyway, then they're going to do it. You know, then that's going to happen. You have to set expectation, even if somebody's bending the rules somewhere. Because if you don't set expectation and they are caught or they're reported that they are texting, then that comes back on you. And then you'll have to be able to admit that you never set expectation for that. Then you'll have to go back and set expectation and wait for a second violation. But it's really important, I think, that you make those things known. And it'd be a nice thing for you to tell your customers and prospects. When you tell them how great of a company you are, you know, if there's a list of things you do, you might say all of our drivers are safe drivers. There's no texting, something like that. I'm just throwing out some ideas to help people brainstorm through this. Matter of fact, if anybody listening to this has ideas, I'd love to see it in the comments in social media or on Twitter as a response to this podcast. We could even potentially do another podcast just about this whole topic because it's huge. I really like the idea, again, of the driving interview. That'd be really cool if there is a checklist that went along. I'd love to help create that on this side to put that out for people. Maybe even some policy suggestions on how you could write it into policy and how you can communicate that to your employees. Not just the texting part, but courteous driving, safe driving, vehicle. And maybe there's like a vehicle maintenance schedule or reminders. Boy, could you imagine how significant those documents could be? I'm not asking you, Brandon, or BF Goodrich for those things, but who knows? Maybe we'll be involved in something like that in the future, making those things available to people. It'd be really helpful. But maybe there's a lot of people in some companies who have something like that. So I'm inviting anybody who has something like that to send in your suggestions, and we'll make those public somehow. So, okay, let me ask you real quick, Brandon, should there be some kind of incident? I know there's incident reports and documentation when there is some kind of an accident that happens in your company. Do you have any thoughts about how employers should respond to incidents or reports of unsafe, discourteous drivers on their team?
Yeah, and I mean, the few examples that I've just seen, you know, driving around myself is, you know, there's some bumper stickers that I've seen on the back of certain company and vehicles that that just allow people to report, how's my driving? So there's a vehicle number and a number to call in. And it sounds like there's already a system that exists to be able to do that, to allow the general public to report in on non-courteous driving. Tracking it that way is a good example for sure. If there's an accident, there needs to be an accident report that's done by the responding police officers. But maybe there needs to be an internal investigation that's also done on the company side. I know that when we would have incidents that would happen at our test facility, we always had to write an incident report on what happened so that we could document the things that went wrong. And then it's a easy way to look back and say, is there a way that this can be improved so that it doesn't happen again?
Yeah, I love that. And you talked about the bumper sticker. It would be kind of interesting because that's a form of accountability that you're now putting on, you know, every driver in their vehicles to say, hey, when you're on company time, you put this decal or this magnet on and you're reminded, or if it's a company vehicle, it's there all the time. That's not just reminding other people that you're a safe and courteous driver, but it's reminding other people to help hold you accountable. And that being in your mind all the time would make you a better driver, I think, knowing that people can report you. What a powerful accountability tool for companies to have that. So I don't know if that's feasible for everybody or if everybody wants to take up advertising space on their work vehicles for that, but it can be really small. Maybe it's a bumper sticker, maybe it's something that's removable, but that's something to consider anyway. Well, I've loved these conversations with you, Brandon. You guys bring a lot of expertise and knowledge to this subject because you've been in extreme conditions and in extreme testing conditions. So you kind of understand the edges of the gamut of this whole topic. So let me ask you again, how do listeners learn more about BF Goodrich and the Tradesman Support Program?
Yeah, so if you want to learn more about the BF Goodrich Tradesman Support Program, the best thing to do is to go to our website, bfgoodrichtires.com, and you can find some information there on Tradesman, or you can simply go to your favorite search engine and just type in BFG Tradesman, and you'll find a link that'll take you right to the same information.
Well, I've enjoyed these episodes. This Road Ready series has been really fun. Brandon, you've done great. I threw you some curveballs, and you responded really well, and I appreciate hearing your stories, and you guys over there at BF Goodrich are doing a good thing, and I hope people take advantage of this Tradesman Support Program.
Yeah, Chris, thanks so much for having me. This Tradesman Support Program, when I first learned about it, I thought, wow, this is really cool. Whoever came up with this idea came up with a good one. So we're happy to help out in any way we can.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being on Paint Ed.
Thank you, sir.
Paint Ed podcasts are a product of the Painting Contractors Association. To find out more about upcoming education opportunities or for more information about joining PCA, visit pcapainted.org. We'll see you next time. The tread depth does impact water evacuation and helps you avoid hydroplaning, right?
That's correct. Yep. The deeper the tread, the better the tires are at for hydroplaning. So,
yeah, that's...
and better at evacuating water from underneath the contact patch.
Gotcha. Did you say it's better at hydroplaning or
preventing? It's better for preventing hydroplaning.
And did you say that?
I don't know.